discover, experience, repeat.
You are listening to Fly here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Melissa Rodway, and today I have Lynn Salvo joining me on Zoom from McLean, Virginia. Lynn has been in the Guinness Book of World Records not only once, but twice, as the oldest female to cycle across the U.S. in 2016 and Canada in 2018. So welcome to Fly, Lynn.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
I came across an article about you, and it was a glorious picture of you. I'm sure you are familiar with it, of you holding your bike above your head on a beach. And then I read a little bit more about you, and you're quite fascinating. So it's nice to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you.
So your story is interesting. In my research, I learned that you were 49 and you were deciding you wanted to approach midlife a little bit differently. So what happened for you? What were your goals that inspired you for this new chapter?
Well, it was not only the year I was about to turn 50, which is a big goalpost or obstacle or whatever you want to call it for a lot of people. But in addition, it was the millennium change year. So it was like a not double whammy, but it was, well, I don't know, inspiring. So I started three things that year. I started a PhD, I started a business, and then to balance those, I started running.
Wow. What had your career been before that?
Well, I would say that most of my life I've been an educator in one form or another, but I had been tutoring math for quite a few years, and that was my favorite job that I ever had, was tutoring one-on-one children in math. But then I thought, well, wait a minute, if this is working really well with one person, maybe I could expand it, and I turned it into a small business that I ran for 15 years. But I think ultimately I'm not really a business person, and the business aspect of it was hard for me, and I really enjoyed developing the curricula but not running a business. So fortunately I was able to sell it for a little bit of money that financed my adventures in 2015.
Oh, awesome. And what was your PhD in?
Math education.
Math
leadership.
Education. Oh, wow. That's a big deal. And what about running? So what was it about running that appealed to you?
It was so simple.
It's cheap.
No equipment. I literally, the first day that I did it, I kind of was inspired to do it because I had gone to a store and tried on a sweater and the buttons scalloped open. And I thought, oh no, this can't be me. You know, I got to do something about this. So I remember I saw it was around Halloween and it was in the pitch black. And I just literally sneaked out my door so nobody knew I was even going to try it. And I ran up to the street corner, which was a quarter of a mile. By the time I got to the top, I was huffing and puffing and thirsty and, you know, felt like I was going to die. I think it was about 2 years later, I ran my first marathon and qualified for the Boston Marathon.
Wow. So that's fast.
But just like so many things, if you just chip away about it, a little teeny, teeny, teeny bit at a time, you get there.
Absolutely. And so you've gone from running to cycling. So what was the path you took there?
So after I ran my first marathon, then I started having running injuries. So my coaches suggested that I also switched coach, but they suggested that I try other sports, cross training. So I had an old beater bicycle that a friend of mine had given to my daughter. So I used that for a while. And then I got into triathlon and I was doing pretty well in the triathlons. I was in my early 50s and there weren't that many women competing. So I thought, well, if I get a nice bike, you know, maybe I can do even better. So I got my first good bike. It was a Trek Madone. I think it was 2003 or 2004. And I used that for 13 years. That
wow.
Took me across the United States twice.
Wow.
And then I got a Cannondale about 2 years ago, and that took me across Canada.
So you got addicted to cycling, obviously.
Oh, right. So I didn't tell the whole path because what happened was, yeah, I was starting to get the running injuries. And then with swimming, I basically ended up with two rotator cuff surgeries. So that eliminated both of those. And I really enjoyed the cycling. And there's times in cycling where you don't have to do anything except sit on the seat. So, yeah, sometimes you have to earn those times, but still. It just suited me physically and mentally. It just really worked for me.
So you've gone from that to deciding to ride across the US and to ride across Canada. How did this dream come about for you?
Well, I sold my business in the fall of 2014. So then I started to have more time available. And I was thinking that I'd like to cycle across the US in 2016. And mind you, the most I'd ever done before this was a one-day century ride. So it was quite a leap. I had never, ever done a multi-day bike ride.
Wow.
So I want to say it was around June of 2015. I was thinking that I would see if I could do 300 miles in a week, because that's what in my mind I would need to do to be able to cycle across the US. So the very week that I got to that point, I was in between two rides. I did one ride on my own, and then I was going to join a group of women who I cycle with a lot. And I got an email from a friend that forwarded from a friend of hers who was going to do a ride across the US in September. And I said, wait a minute, I'm already ready. I don't need to wait till 2016. Let's do this. And so I thought about it a little bit. Not very much. It was kind of a no-brainer. And then I interviewed with the fellow who was running the ride about 2 days later. I applied, literally, I applied right there in the parking lot. And I had the interview 2 days later. And the fellow said, so how many multi-day rides have you done? And I said, what's a multi-day ride? And nevertheless, he took a chance on me. So I wasn't the oldest in the group, but I was definitely the oldest woman. There were only two women, so that was easy. The other woman was in her early 40s, so her attitude towards me was, oh my God, I'm gonna have to drag this woman along with me, you know. But I proved myself.
I'm sure it was the opposite, right?
Well, it wasn't the opposite. She was a strong cyclist, but I had heard that this ride leader had fired a woman from another ride. And I said, there's no way I'm going to be that woman. So I trained like you wouldn't believe. I did hills. I did everything. I did a hill ride with some of my friends, on which I had to get off the bike before I got to the top. And about a few months later, one of them confessed to me right before I was ready to go to fly to California to do that first ride. She confessed that among themselves, they had that there's no way she can go across the country.
Really?
They said among themselves, but I did my homework and I got ready and I did it. And I remember on the second or third day of the ride, or maybe it was even the very first day, coming out of San Diego, there's mountains right away. And I remember being a good mile ahead of everybody on that very first day because everybody else assumed they didn't need to train because they were, big cyclists.
And how long did this take? How long does it take to ride across the US?
I don't remember the exact number of days, but about 2 months.
Oh,
I think
wow.
the two or three. I can't quite remember. I think it was two.
How do people determine a route for something like this? How do you know what route's best?
In this case, it was very simple. The ride leader had never ridden across the US before, and he wanted to do the simplest possible. So it was called the Southern Tier. The Adventure Cycling Association has a number of well-studied routes, and so that's the one that we did.
And when you cycled across Canada, you were on your own, is that right?
Yes. And also, when I cycled across the US the second time in 2016, I used the Race Across America route. I didn't race it because it's insane as a race because you don't sleep and you cycle for 22 hours a day typically. And I wanted to see things, but I did use their route, and it's a great, fascinating route, but also very difficult.
So you did that. The second time you went across the States, you were on your own, and then Canada, you were on your own.
Yes.
Okay.
The second time across the US, I was using an established route, the Race Across America route.
Right.
But for Canada, there isn't really an established route. So I had to really dig deep to find resources and ask people and, figure out what was the best route.
And how long did that take to plan that?
Well, I want to say about a year. Yeah, it was about a year. And I remembered that I had applied to Guinness World Records to do that ride, and I hadn't heard from them. But I figured, well, I still want to do it whether they approve it or not. So I had it pretty well planned by the time they finally approved it. It took them 11 months to approve my application.
So that's how it works. You have to apply to them and then they say yes or no.
Yes.
Oh,
And then
wow.
they set rules, lots of rules.
So I've read that you had to get people to sign or witness what you were doing. Is that how it works?
That's one of many, many pieces of how you set a record. The first time I did it going across the United States, I was just so embarrassed. I'm kind of a shy person, and I would just have to go up to total strangers and say, "Hey, could you please fill out this form for me?" And it's not just a signature, it's a long form. You have to say who you are, where you live, where you saw the cyclists, what they were doing. So it takes a good 5 minutes or so to fill out the form, but it also takes a little bit of time to establish enough rapport to ask somebody to fill it out. So at first, I was really hesitant about it, but then I realized, wait, I'm meeting really interesting people this way. And it ended up adding a whole dimension to the ride to have to get witnesses.
I'm sure. And what was their reaction to meet you and see you doing this?
I do remember coming down a hill in Colorado, a really steep hill, and I came to a rest area. And I did ask somebody for a witness there, and they said, "Yeah, I saw you coming down that hill." And yeah, I'll be really glad to sign something for you.
I'm sure. Wow, that's amazing. And just to give people an idea, in kilometers, so the US is 5,090 kilometers. Does that sound right? And then Canada was 6,600 kilometers.
Yes.
That's immense. That's a lot of riding. And how long
It's,
did it take you to do Canada?
I think that was 70 days.
So, wow, I would have thought more. And it's summertime. You obviously did it, or was it fall?
It was summer.
So very hot in some places for sure.
Well, compared to where I am, Canada
Right.
is always cooler.
That's
I
true.
do remember going through Manitoba, and I remember stopping in a little sandwich shop, and the people said, "Oh my God, I can't believe you're out there on a bicycle." I said, "You have no idea how hot it is where I come from."
Right.
So I don't remember feeling hot so much in Canada as cold, because I remember a day, July 26th. I remember it because it was my sister's birthday. And I was in Marathon, Ontario, and it was, I don't know, 40 degrees and raining. And I almost got hypothermia in July. So, yeah,
That's
so it was
true.
more the cold that I remember than the hot.
What other challenges did you have, or what kind of challenges do you have on trips like this?
Well, I can really get myself worked up about things. So, like every day, there's a crux to the problem. My son is a rock climber, and he says there's a crux to the problem. So it might be a hill that I have to do, or a road that's not so great, or a little bit of gravel. So I can get myself pretty worked up about things. But then it's kind of like you have to face your fears. And once you do, you say, "Why was I so upset about that? Why did I let myself get so psyched out about that?" Because it's just best to just do it.
Right. I always find that too. You get worked up about the things that you shouldn't. It's the things you didn't get worked up about that caused the problems.
This is also true. Yep.
And so, were you using GPS or what kind of
Yes.
navigation?
Yep, definitely. I use a Garmin. I plot everything on Ride with GPS. I actually love to make routes. I've made probably hundreds and hundreds of routes on Ride with GPS because I love maps. So I have a pretty strong visual before I even start cycling any particular day of what to expect. Although when you look at Ride with GPS, everything looks flat.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And so that's usually the biggest surprise is, I can see that there's supposed to be a hill, but then you look at it and say, oh, okay, that's a real hill.
And did you have any support with you, or were you completely on your own?
No, I had support for both of the rides that I did that were for records, 2016 and 2018. My main support was my dear friend Susie, who I used to teach with. And we found substitutes for her in the middle to give her a break because this is a really long time for her to sit in my car.
Yeah.
But with setting a record, I really felt the need to have support because you have to carry all these witness books. And I had like four major binders with all the information that I needed to collect and that I needed to take with me. So it was just not feasible to do that self-supported. But since then, I have done a few self-supported trips. And there's a real, trying to think of the word, excitement, adventure. There's something really special about letting yourself go and be self-supported. So the longest that I ever did was last summer. It was in August, and I went from Wichita, Kansas to Brandon, Manitoba. So that was the north spoke of the peace sign. That was
Right.
21 days self-supported with my friend Brenda.
We're going to get into this piece ride because that's quite fascinating. But do you prefer to be on your own or do you prefer to be in a group?
I'm actually very comfortable either way. I'm extremely comfortable cycling alone. Because then, if something grabs my interest or I want to take an extra photo, I don't have to worry about holding up the group. And I'm just independent that way. So I'm not one of those people who has to have company on a bike ride, although I enjoy company on a bike ride.
I'm sure
So,
too it was nice to see Susie at the end of the day when you finished your rides. And how many kilometers or how many hours a day would you be riding?
I don't really measure it in hours. We plotted out the route across Canada ahead of time, and we stuck to the route except for when I got this huge tailwind a couple of times in Manitoba, I think it was, or Alberta, I forget which, or maybe both, and I got ahead of schedule. But to answer your question, typically 100 kilometers a day on average, but the 2 days when I got the huge tailwind, now you have to help me out with this in terms of kilometers, but almost 140 miles each of those days, and it
Oh,
was almost
wow.
effortless.
Wow. It's wild. And where were you staying at night? What kind of accommodations did you have?
Well, I'm old, so I like my bed, and I like a shower, and I like Wi-Fi, so hotels, or in Canada especially, quite a few warm showers hosts.
Oh,
Which
nice.
is really wonderful.
Yeah, and you're going to meet some interesting people doing that,
Yeah,
that's for
definitely.
sure. What about wildlife? So you have seen, I mean, massive amounts of Canada and the US. So what kind of things did you get to see?
Well, in Canada, I did get to see grizzly bears, but I
Oh,
was not on
wow.
my bike when I saw them.
That's good.
I was safely in a car. We were in Lake Louise and going out to visit sites around Lake Louise in the car after I had ridden there, and there was a grizzly mom and two bears by the side of the road, just doing their thing. It was amazing. I've seen black bears on my bike. As a matter of fact, it's really sad, but I saw a black bear get hit and killed by a motorist,
Oh
right
no.
in front of my eyes. It was a cub. It was so sad.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
saw it happening and I screamed and it was too late.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah.
But in terms of other wildlife, I just did a ride a couple of days ago where I saw a number of great blue herons. I've seen bald eagles. I have yet to see a moose.
Oh wow. That's gotta be on your list.
Definitely on my list.
Well, this is pretty amazing. How did it feel to achieve all this and to be in the Guinness Book of World Records twice? That's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. Well, it's satisfying. It's kind of unreal. I feel like a pretty ordinary person. So, to be in the Guinness Book of World Records is kind of really? I mean, I just approach, like I said, it's just I approach life incrementally. Just, okay, if I want to get from A to B, I have to do the first mile or the first pedal stroke, and then these big things happen. But at the same time, though, I have to say, I really love huge projects, really, really huge projects, like starting a business, like doing a PhD. So this kind of a ride across an entire continent fits in with the idea of doing really big projects.
And you are also writing for a cause, Lynn. So what was the cause?
So I've written for a number of causes, but the one that I've really settled in on is peace. So when I was riding across Canada, that was the first one that was really dedicated as a peace ride. And I visited peace monuments, one peace monument at least in each province as I went across.
Oh, beautiful. And so your ride across Canada in 2018, is this what inspired the peace ride that you took on in 2019?
Actually, it got started sooner. I do remember cycling with some buddies locally, and I said, I'd really like to do a circumnavigation of the United States. That kind of just sat there in my mind. And then I was on a ride in 2017 on the East Coast of the United States from my house to Florida. And there was a gal who I met on that trip who I think I must have met her before because we bonded really, really well. And I remember talking to her. I remember actually sitting there with my laptop, this very laptop that I'm using right now, and just plotting a peace sign the size of North America on a map and saying, okay, what do I need to do to create a Strava art peace sign? And that's when I realized the pieces that I was going to need to do. So Canada filled in the top part of the peace sign. And then all the trips that I've done since have been filling in different segments of the peace sign. So I think it'll be a total of 13 segments. And I've done 12 of them.
Oh, wow. 12 of the
Yeah.
13. So, for people who might not know, Strava is a bike app for riding, right?
Yes.
It calculates like distance and routes and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Facebook for athletes.
Oh, cool. And so I saw your route. And so, if people can imagine, it is like seeing a giant peace sign over both coasts of the US, and then it gets probably the southern parts of many Canadian provinces.
Yes.
So, how did you determine intersecting points of a peace sign?
Well, in order to do that, I needed a middle point. And so the middle point was Wichita, Kansas, because I have a really, really good cycling friend who lives in Wichita. And so even though it's a little bit south of what would be the center point of the peace sign, it worked. So I cycled to Wichita from San Diego, and then I cycled from Wichita to Biloxi, Mississippi. And then I cycled from Austin, Texas to Wichita, and then from Wichita to Brandon, Manitoba.
Wow.
Each one of those was at a different time. They weren't connected in one ride. They were all different rides.
And did you want to do them differently? You didn't want to do it all at once. I mean, that would be a massive ride, right?
Well, I did want to do some of it at once. I really would have loved to have gone from Austin to Manitoba all in one trip, but I just couldn't quite pull it off.
Right. And so, what have you learned about these two countries that you've now spent so much time in and seen so much of them?
Well, I've learned a lot of geography,
Yeah.
and wildlife to some degree, but what was really a surprise to me was history. Because when I was in high school, I had terrible history teachers. I really hated history, but I've discovered that being in the exact spot where something dramatic and historic happened, it's like it's full of meaning for me. So I'm very visually and spatially oriented. So being there where it happened is pretty amazing. For example, there are a couple that come to mind. I was at the very spot where Emmett Till would have harassed the white owner of a store, and then he was kidnapped and murdered. And I was also in the courtroom where the sham trial was held, where the murderers were acquitted. I was also at the high school in Arkansas, Little Rock, the high school where the Little Rock Nine were the first nine black students to integrate the high school.
Wow.
So, I mean, once I set the route, I mean, once I set the general route, then I said, okay, what's in this general direction that I can make a point of going to while I'm on this ride? And so the ride from Wichita to Biloxi was a lot of civil rights sites. It was really informative. And then I had the opportunity last June to ride an Underground Railroad ride from Cambridge, Maryland to St. Catharines, Ontario. And then I actually continued that on to North Bay to connect with the peace sign. But that was incredible. My friend David Goodrich, he's writing his third book now. He had designed the route basically. And then once he accepted that I ride it with him, I participated in the development of the routes. And he had managed to arrange interviews with a lot of people along the way who had really special knowledge about the Underground Railroad. So that was just amazing.
Yeah, I bet.
And then another ride that was, relatively speaking, a small ride, which was a self-supported ride from my house to Bethany Beach, Delaware. So it was a 3-day ride with a friend. And our first day, we got down to Southern Maryland to get ready to take a ferry the next morning. And when we were getting ready to get on the ferry, there was one ferry a day, so we had to get there early, and I had time to wander a little bit. And there was a historic sign about the Pearl, which was an escape attempt. 77 enslaved people all at once had gotten on the ship in Washington, D.C., and they had gotten as far as Point Lookout, Maryland. So they'd sailed all the way down the Potomac River, but then the weather was too rough for them to then go up the Chesapeake Bay, and they were found and towed back to Washington, D.C. So it's a terribly sad story, but I got really interested in it from there. And then I read three books about it, and I developed several routes right here in the D.C. area to sites that were related to that, either the sites where the enslaved people had worked, or where the trial was held, where the ship took off, where the ship landed, was towed back to. So, I mean, the summary of all this is that what really, really surprised me was how much I've enjoyed learning history through bike rides.
Is that sort of what you're doing now from home, is creating more local routes
Yes.
to see some history?
Yes. Because this is an aside that hasn't come up yet in our conversation. I was supposed to be biking in Europe this
Right.
summer. I was supposed to be going from Norway to Spain. I was going to be trying to set my third world record. And this little virus happened to mess things up. So what I've been doing in its place is trying to think about aspects of the ride in Europe. For example, today I would have arrived in Lithuania. So today, with a friend who's of Lithuanian descent, we're going to cycle to the embassy of Lithuania.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So just each day, I've been trying to pull some element out of what the Europe ride would have been and to recreate it in some fashion locally. Like yesterday, I would have gone to a particular beach in Latvia. So I went to a little beach on a little lake nearby. So just recreating some elements. And what's really interesting is I'm finding out a huge amount of local history. Like, for example, within a mile of my house, within a mile, and I've lived here for 40 years and didn't know this until a couple of days ago, the first black church that was founded after the Civil War is within a mile of my house. The first black church in Fairfax County. I have
Wow.
to specify. And I found the grave of the pastor who founded it. So,
That's
I mean,
amazing.
yeah, so the turning inward and turning local, it's the real silver lining
Yes.
of this awful situation.
Yes, I think that's the message that we're hearing for everyone. We're all looking in our own backyards, and discovering some amazing things. Will you try to do the Europe ride when life gets back to somewhat of a new normal?
I definitely still want to try it, yes, for sure. And I also want to finish the peace sign and cycle down the Pacific coast of the U.S., which I don't think I've mentioned to you, but that is also approved as a possible record.
Oh, wow. So you're going to go for 4 records.
Well, that's my dream, but I've got to stay healthy long enough, and the people around me need to stay healthy so that I can, like, my husband is older than I am, and he does not come with me on the rides. He enjoys his home life, but, you know, he has to stay healthy. My mom is 96. She has to stay healthy. So
yeah,
I hope to be able to do these rides. The plan right now is to do the Europe ride starting in the spring and going from Spain to Norway instead of Norway to Spain. And that has 2 advantages. I don't have to wait a whole year to try again. And the other thing is, I've been following the weather in the places where I would have been. And I kind of knew that Spain was going to be really, really hot by the time I got there. And I also found that in Norway, on the day that I would have started, I would have had like 40 degrees and 30 mile an hour headwinds. Mm. So it might just turn out that I really hadn't thought through the weather piece thoroughly. And that's another silver lining, that if I start in the spring from Spain, then I'll be chasing spring all the way up northwards across Europe.
Can I ask how old you are now, Lynn?
I am 70, and I'll be 71 in 7 or 8 weeks.
Wow. So an early happy birthday to you. And I can see, Lynn, no one else can. You're rocking 70. You don't look like a 70-year-old woman to me. And so there's no one else in Europe that's done that piece that's your age as a female?
No.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Yep.
Exciting. And again, how many kilometers in total would the peace sign be once you complete all of that?
The total peace sign. I did figure that out in kilometers. The total peace sign is 23,335 kilometers.
Oh, wow. That's massive.
And I've done all but, okay, help me out, 2,000 miles of that. So I've done like 85% of it.
Yes, I would say. Let's go with that. My math is terrible. I could use you. I could use a math tutor. Wow, that is so exciting. And also part of your journey, which you haven't mentioned, is that you did lose a brother at a very young age. So that's also part of your crusade for peace, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. My brother was shot down in Vietnam on January 2nd of 1970. He had a young child on the way. So my nephew never met his father, and my brother never got to be a father to his son. So that's a real point of sadness for me. Between that actually happening and the fact that I was at the tail end of the hippie era coming through college has kind of put that peacenik thing into me. But also, you know, where on earth are we going with this world right now?
Yes.
What we're doing just doesn't make sense. And there's so much more to be had by cooperation and collaboration than by competition.
Yeah, it's good timing for a message like this.
Yep.
What is the difference between traveling around the way that you are and being in a car or a bus? I mean, this is a huge difference.
There's truly no comparison. Down to the granular level of when I go across a bridge on a bicycle, I almost always stop and take a picture of the river or the body of water. And you positively can't do that in a car. So I just get to see things on a much more personal scale. Also, I'm exposed to the weather. You know, I'm out there. I'm vulnerable. So everything is much more visceral. Mm-hmm. It's not superficial contact with nature and the roads and, you know, the scenery and the history and everything else around. You're really there. And you have to be present. I talk about being, when I ride, I'm hyper aware. I don't use earbuds. I don't listen to audiobooks. I just want to be 100% present, 150% present. And also a part I haven't mentioned is that I really, really love to blog. And I would say part of why I'm doing all these substitute rides for Europe is because I'm blogging about them. It's like I need to blog.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a literature person or an English major by any. I was a science major and then went into math. So that's more my academic background. But I really, really love to write the blog. And the way that's connected to seeing the world on a bicycle is that I almost never determine the title of the blog before I actually write it, and I let it emerge from the day. So I have to be 100% present in the moment for that to happen.
I get
And you know,
that.
in a car, you can play a game on your phone or look at the news if somebody else is driving. On the bike, you have to be all there. And speaking of vulnerability, when I did the self-supported ride last August from Wichita, Kansas to Brandon, Manitoba, that was 21 days with us, no support vehicle. Our first bicycle shop was really, really, really far without a bike checkup. And so, you know, we just had to really cross our fingers. At one point, I got a little bit sloppy about the way I packed my bike because I don't use panniers. My bike won't take panniers, it won't take a rack. So I had a frame bag and then a huge saddle bag sticking out the back. And I was a little sloppy about the way I put my sandals on it. And one of them slipped down and got in between the spokes.
Oh
And
gosh.
fortunately, it went vertically and not horizontally, so it didn't stop the bike. It just made a noise. But that kind of, you know, vulnerability. And then at one point, Brenda's bicycle, her pannier rack actually disconnected and it was sitting there on the ground behind her bike. So she had fortunately brought with her zip ties and stuff. So you have to get really creative. But the way that it connects with people is, for example, when her bike rack came off, we jerry-rigged it with the zip ties. But then we just drove into a huge granary. And one of the workers there found some big heavy wire and he wired it up for her. Another place we went, it was a melon farmer and he just gave us a melon. Fortunately, Brenda was able to carry it on her bike. I couldn't carry it on mine. And then another place we met a sunflower farmer and he told us all about his farm and his hogs and he just picked this big sunflower and just gave it to me and showed me how the kernels are so sweet when they're, you know, fresh off of the flower, right off of the field. There's no way I would have had those interactions in a car.
Yeah, the kindness of strangers. Yeah.
Definitely.
What would you say are the biggest challenges of these types of trips?
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank because
Yeah.
I find the challenges exciting. So I kind of don't think of them as challenges.
Yes.
You know, organizing it all, but I actually love the planning part. I really, really like the Europe trip. I spent 2 years planning it.
Oh, wow.
So I really hope I get to do it. And I get to replan it because I'm going to go from south to north instead of north to south. So some of it'll stay the same, but I'll get to replan a lot of it.
Oh, that's exciting. And because we are from Canada, I would love to know what your favorite part of Canada has been so far.
Well, I don't want to make any enemies in Canada. I absolutely loved all of Canada. I'd say there was a soft spot in Nova Scotia because that's where it finished. And I found the people there to be just very soft in a really nice way.
Yeah. So did you ride from Vancouver to Halifax? Was
Yes.
that your route? Okay.
Well, I actually started in Tofino.
Oh, you started in Tofino. How beautiful.
Yeah. And this was where I had to request an exception from Guinness World Records because they don't typically allow a ferry on a bike ride. But I explained that I really wanted to go from ocean to ocean. And the only way I could do that was to go from Tofino and take that one ferry to Vancouver and then continued. So I ended up in Lawrencetown Beach. So not exactly, just outside of Halifax.
Oh, okay.
But a friend of a friend had a friend who lived in Halifax who I had actually met previously briefly, and she came with her whole bicycle group out to meet me when I finished.
Oh, how beautiful.
It was just so special. Yeah, Judy.
Yes, yeah.
So things like that. And also with the peace theme, I was in touch with the Canadian Friends Service Committee, and the fellow there connected me with people across Canada in at least four places. I was connected with somebody local who was in the peace movement. It just added a huge dimension to it. But, you know, if things continue the way they're going in the United States, I would move to Canada in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I really, really love Canada.
Mm. Do you love the bugs?
Oh, okay. You did remind me. Yes. You reminded me of one obstacle.
Yeah.
When I was going to North Bay, there was one stretch that if I were allowed to go on Route 11, it would have been, I don't know, a huge number of miles shorter and simpler and level. And instead, because bicycles are not allowed there, and there's a big wide shoulder and there's no traffic, so it's a rule that they should think about changing. But anyway, so what I had to do instead was 23 miles on gravel that was hilly, and there were deer flies. That was the one time when I came out of that, I was almost in tears.
Yeah.
When I finished the gravel section. There were also a few big logging trucks, but they weren't really the issue. The deer flies were terrible, really terrible.
Yeah.
So for the most part, that was my only really bad bug experience.
Yeah. And I was amazed that you wrote about cycling in Toronto, because I cycle around Toronto quite a bit and we all have our grumblings about riding in the city, but you thought it was fine.
Well, yes. And the reason is I had been in Toronto before, not too long before I rode there, maybe a year or two. And I had been in a double-decker bus as a total tourist in a torrential downpour to the point where there was water sloshing around in the bottom level of this bus, you know, and just the amount of traffic and the kinds of traffic and pedestrians everywhere and cars and buses. And I just thought, I can't believe I'm going to cycle through Toronto. And then when I did, I came in on this beautiful trail, mostly along the water. And then I had to negotiate a little bit through the city to the friend's house where I stayed for two nights, actually. And then leaving from there, it took me about 2 miles that were on roads and traffic. And then I got into the spectacular trail system.
Yes.
Where I'm down underneath, kind of underneath, when I see all these big bridges up high and everything. But there's this beautiful greenery and wilderness and manicured trail system down underneath Toronto that was fabulous.
It's true. Yeah, we are quite lucky here. Sometimes you don't feel like you're in a city. There are some amazing green spaces, and yeah, we do have some great bike paths. So I'm glad you got to experience that. Sometimes driving or riding your bike right in the thick of it is quite something, but if you can get on a trail, it's beautiful. So that's good.
I have to give a plug for the Washington, D.C. area, because we also have a fabulous trail system in this area.
Oh, that's
so
good.
I can go all over the place, mostly on trails, and there's pretty good connections. And it's only getting better because the mentality has gotten out there about making great bike routes.
Oh, it's so important for a city, isn't it, to have a bike-friendly urban environment. That's for sure. They're working on it in Toronto, too. So hopefully it prevails everywhere. We are now going to do this segment called On the Fly. And so I'm asking all of my guests these 8 questions about travel, habits, bucket list items, and more. So here we go. Number 1, what and where was your first trip that gave you the travel bug?
Well, I think it was actually my very first century ride that I ever did. We met up with some people who had ridden across the country, and I think that's where it got planted. But the very first big trip I did was all the way across the U.S.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And that was in 2015.
What country do you think has the best food?
Italy. My husband's from Italy. I've never cycled even an inch there. I have to remedy that.
Yeah.
At some point, but
it does. Everyone says Italy, to be honest, or most people on the show say Italy because it is the best. Okay, 3, what essential item do you bring with you on every trip?
A backup battery.
Smart. Very good.
So if my phone or my Garmin start to lose charge, I've got a backup system.
Number four, what is your best travel tip to pass on to others?
I would say to travel lightly and to be very open.
Good one. Number five, is there a certain item or souvenir that you look for on each trip from a country?
Well, physically speaking, I try not to get souvenirs because then I just have to carry them. But I have acquired a set of four coins over the years by luck. One was a challenge coin that I got in San Diego when I started my first record attempt. And then some friends who I met who were actually witnesses for me first gave me a peace coin, the John Lennon and Yoko Ono coin, right from the Canadian Mint.
Amazing.
And then a local nurse gave me two peace coins. So peace coins are,
Oh,
I would say,
that's.
the physical thing. But the other non-physical thing is peace sites, places where either peace was created or that are celebrating that there's peace now.
Amazing. Number six, what is at the top of your bucket list? So this could be an adventure, a destination, an experience, whatever you want.
Yeah, clearly I would really like to do the Europe trip. And the second item is to finish the peace sign. Those are way, way up there.
Those are amazing goals. I would love to cycle around Europe too. That sounds really beautiful. Okay, number seven. Where were you last and where were you supposed to be going next? So you probably have already answered those questions.
The last big bike trip I did was Kansas to Manitoba, and Europe's where I hope to go next.
Okay, here's the big one, Lynn. Fly, discover, experience, repeat. This is the Fly Travel Radio mantra. So if you could add a word after discover and experience to reflect how you feel about travel and adventure, what would you say?
I'm glad you gave me that question ahead of time because I
Ha!
couldn't
It's a
think
tough
about
one.
it. And the word that I came up with was reflect.
Excellent. And why reflect?
To hold on to the memory, but also to think about the meaning of it. All the rides that I'm doing locally this year, some of them are short on distance, but long on meaning. So, yeah, reflecting on, the point of it. What's the point of this ride?
Beautiful. Is there anything you'd like to share before we have to let you go? Sadly, I feel I could talk to you all day. You're very fascinating and impressive, and we should all aspire to do these new things in our lives.
Well, thank you, Melissa. I would say it's not too late. Do it. Whatever your goal is, brush it off. And see, if the whole thing seems too daunting, just think about what little incremental, tiny little piece you can do of it and just do that much. I mean, sometimes when I'm cycling up a hill, I literally look at a shadow that's a meter ahead of me. I say, I can make it to that shadow. I can make it to that next piece of litter in the road. I can make it to, the next road sign. So thinking of a monster project, but doing it a pedal stroke at a time. Or if it's not cycling, which, whatever it is, just a little tiny bit at a time.
That's excellent advice. I love that. And where can people follow your blog?
Life is like a bike.wordpress.com. And life is like a bike is all one word.
Perfect. And you're a great writer. I did read some of your entries,
Well,
and
thank you.
I get that. I think sometimes traveling can be very creative, and writing sort of accentuates that experience. So I love that you found that outlet.
It's been really, really wonderful outlet. It came after the cycling, but it's the way that I capture it and remember it. And I hope to turn the 13 segments of the peace sign into a book one day. So I
Oh.
figure with all the blog entries, I've got a lot of material to work with when the time comes. But I'm too interested in doing the adventures and I'm still able. So, I don't want to stop doing the adventures while I still physically can.
Yes, excellent. I love that. Thank you so much, Lynn. It's been so lovely to speak with you, and people should definitely follow you on your adventures once COVID is over and we can all resume our lives again. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Melissa. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you.
You are listening to Fly here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Melissa Rodway, and I was just speaking with Lynn Salvo, joining me on Zoom from McLean, Virginia. Again, the almost 71-year-old Lynn holds two Guinness Book of World Records for being the oldest female to cycle across Canada and the U.S., and it sounds like she is going for two more records as soon as she possibly can. I noticed in this interview that we didn't speak much about Lynn's age and the fact that she is doing a huge amount of cycling at a time when many of her peers may be thinking of slowing down. Lynn is a cyclist, an adventurer, a writer, and an advocate for peace. Age is really not an identifier with her and seemed very insignificant while talking to her. It really is just a number. Thanks for tuning in to Fly here on CIUT. I will be back with Mario Rigby next week, who just completed a 20-day kayaking adventure across Lake Ontario. We are all finding adventures in our own backyard.
Fly.